For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Special episode tonight. We're going to take a break from the That One Play episodes, which have been going been a lot of fun, but we have a Todd Monken sighting and a hiring to talk about, an exciting new offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens. Georgia background, 57 years old, long history in the NFL and the college ranks. Here to talk to me about that is a very prominent Georgia fan, Jake Vogel. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, thrilled to have you here. And you're just the right guy for this. I really appreciated doing the show with you when Roquan Smith was originally brought on for the Ravens. I thought you had some great insights about that. So we'll talk some Todd Monken tonight in terms of what he means to the Ravens offense, what he will mean in terms of changes to the Ravens offense. So let's look a little historically here first. The Ravens have had a number of offensive coordinators and relatively few defensive coordinators. The defensive coordinators the Ravens have almost uniformly been outstanding. Some people might say that Madison was a little bit below the line, but Pagano got a head coaching job after 1 year, and Marvin Lewis was terrific. Rex Ryan certainly had a storied coaching career after he left with the Ravens. Mike Nolan went on to be a head coach. Dean Pease was here for 6 years, and I think a lot of people are down on what he did, but it's successful. Anyway, the point being that the Ravens' defensive coordinators have been uniformly very successful. The offensive coordinators, much less so.
Yeah, that is an understatement, I believe. For sure, the offensive coordinators have been a little bit of a turnstile in Baltimore, and I don't know if some of that's just the tradition that we've had, but also the quarterback play in Baltimore. We had very solid level with Joe Flacco, but not an elite. Even though he was Mr. Elite in Baltimore, he was not the greatest quarterback in the league at the time. So it's a little bit tough to say the reason why, but it's certainly true that defensive coordinators have been, a very, very good spot on this coaching staff, pretty much since the inception of the Ravens.
That's a reasonable point to make about the Ravens' inability to develop or find a starting quarterback. Certainly was a big problem about that. It can be a chicken and egg question, because the right offensive coordinator can sometimes find that quarterback who's you don't know is the guy. And Monken most recently has a record of that.
Absolutely. You're talking about just recently, his last 3 years at Georgia, he had Stetson Bennett, who was a walk-on. By now, most people know his story. Kirby Smart said that, he was third on the depth chart or fourth string at Georgia. And Stetson Bennett, stood up for himself time and time again, saying that he's good enough to play. And he ended up proving it. And I think Todd Monken is a big reason why. So I think both of those guys deserve credit, but going from a walk-on quarterback at a huge program at the University of Georgia and becoming a two-time national champion, it speaks a lot for Todd Monken, and it speaks a lot for Stetson Bennett, kind of the collaboration of those two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to take the credit away from Stetson Bennett, but Stetson Bennett, but he also doesn't deserve all the credit for what happened here. And certainly the tutelage of Monken had to be useful, and the way he fit him into the scheme. I think, given the fact that Monken may be coming to the NFL again, he's been here before, with an opportunity to have an extraordinary talent like Lamar Jackson. And hopefully that works out to be the case. We don't know as of this date. If I'm setting the meter or the over-under percentage right now, I'm right around 50%. I'm not higher than that. I don't think I'm lower than that. I think that's right where I am right now as we sit on February 16th with about 3 weeks to go, a little less until the new league year starts. But anyway, that's until the franchise tag, I think, needs to be applied. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as of right now, there's still a chance he'll have a special talent. He will have a special offensive line anyway, I think, to work with, a pretty good one, and some other things. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure.
Is Monken in his time at Georgia a guy who did anything particularly revolutionary in terms of blocking schemes and whatnot?
I think he continued what they already had going. Honestly, from the blocking perspective, the Georgia run game is, pretty historic. A lot of people would call the University of Georgia RBU because of how many running backs they produce. With that comes a good, strong offensive line. And I think the recruiting process that Kirby Smart has had in place ever since he became the head coach at UGA has been bringing in quality players, not all the time five-star guys. Georgia does develop players really well. So I think Todd Monken has a hand in that. But they have a ton of tertiary coaches at the University of Georgia that help with that. And I'm not sure to the degree that Monken is involved with the offensive linemen in particular, but I think he did a great job with the offensive line and with that run game.
All right, we saw a team that used the tight end a fair amount, particularly in 22 mm-hmm. in the national championship run. Maybe talk a little bit about that, because obviously he's coming to a tight end centric offense here in Baltimore, or one that was tight end centric. Sure.
I think when you're talking about Georgia, you can't get too many sentences into your statement without bringing up the tight ends. This was just a talented group, and honestly, some of the best playmakers at Georgia. Therefore, Todd Monken was smart to use them and smart to, run a lot of 12 personnel looks. And that's simply what he did. You watch enough Georgia tape and you realize that Todd Monken is a coordinator that gets the ball into the playmaker's hands. And that's something that everybody should want. That's something that should be very simple and expected from an offensive coordinator, but it's not always easy to come by. And I think that is something that he will bring to Baltimore. That being said, Brock Bowers, tight end one at Georgia, is a phenomenal athlete, a phenomenal tight end, basically an offensive weapon. And Monken, of course, was going to have him on the field pretty much at all times, anytime that he can. And then Darnell Washington is this behemoth of a tight end that I believe coming into the NFL will be one of the better blocking tight ends, even mm-hmm. as a rookie, which is amazing to say. He's 6'7", about 270, and he's an athlete too. I think he has a real shot of going in the first round, and he is not the same caliber of player as Brock Bowers. So that's what he had to work with at tight end. And now he's coming to Baltimore, where we have Mark Andrews, one of the best guys in the league, Isaiah Likely, who looked pretty promising, and Charlie Kolar as well. So I think he is going to be very interested in continuing some of that 12 personnel looks that he showed at Georgia.
It's kind of funny you mentioned the 12 personnel look, because that would actually be a light look for the 2022 Ravens,
right,
who played over 2.3 tight ends, sixth offensive lineman, and a fullback this year per play. It's by far the heaviest personnel. I know folks who are fans of this show relatively hear me talking about it, because it was mind-boggling by how much they were larger than any other offense in recent NFL history. I think in a relative sense, you probably have to go back to the 1970s before you could find an offense who would be as heavy. And you might have to go back even further than that to find an offense that was as relatively heavy, meaning that they were heavier than the rest of the league by so much. But anyway, certainly the tight ends are a strength of the Ravens. Monken has a history of using the strengths that he walks into, regardless of whether that's been at Tampa Bay or mm-hmm. even Cleveland.
Absolutely. And just a quick comment on the 12 versus 22 and Baltimore versus Georgia. UGA does not have a focal point, focal piece at fullback. That's a position that they use a little bit more sparingly, and they kind of like to do that in the red zone. Occasionally, you'll see Georgia line up a defensive lineman at the fullback position, something that's always fun to see. Jalen Carter, by the way, who might be going first overall, if not that, probably in the top three. He has been used at the fullback position, and also Jordan Davis, who the Ravens were heavily linked to, also did a little bit of fullback action the previous years at UGA. So not a big position for Georgia, but I do think Monken will keep Pat Ricard in Baltimore, at least for the season, and he will like to utilize him. Maybe in the future, the Ravens want to get a little bit more versatile, athletic fullback, kind of like what they had in Juszczyk. But as for 2023, I do expect Pat Ricard to be a piece in this offense.
Okay, well, that's good because he's certainly going to be around for this year. The Ravens have a small cap savings they could harvest if they cut him, but it's not enough that they would feel like it's worth it. They could save about $1.75 million, but I feel fairly confident for that they'll stay with Ricard after the year he had. You know, it's inheriting some components of offense. Now, part of it is inheriting the personnel. The other part of it is really deciding how much of the scheme do you want to keep from the previous era. So Roman kind of had a good situation where he was already the tight ends coach, then the run game coordinator before he became the offensive coordinator. So he was a run game coordinator under Morningway. And so he was already designing a lot of the Ravens run game before he came in and was the Ravens offensive coordinator. Now, Monken coming in, I don't know how much of the, I won't call it the scheme knowledge, the scheme understanding. I mean, there's a lot of the players certainly have a background in understanding how to run the counter plays and all of the various baseline schemes that the Ravens have to move linemen around on a run play. The Ravens certainly know how to run those already. I don't know how much of the scheme is left on the coaching side, whether that was mostly Roman or whether there's another guy. And I've speculated, maybe you have a thought on this, but I speculate that I don't think Joe D'Alessandro probably is the scheme guy. I think he's the individual technical training guy that develops alignment and says, hey, you put your hands here, you do this, but not the guy who says, okay, you got two men pulling on this play. You and you need to both do this kind of thing.
I would agree with that. I think by this time, he would have a pretty good understanding of the scheme side of it because he's been working with Greg Roman for that long, as well as some other coordinators. But I agree. He's more of a hands-on teacher to offensive linemen individually rather than this run game coordinator that Greg Roman, you know, had his hands in before he became the OC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Obviously, watching D'Alessandro at camp on the field, teaching individual offensive linemen, I definitely get that kind of an individual rep by rep thing. They don't do a whole lot of offensive line drilling in the side 10-minute sessions, meaning what it is mostly two and three man. It's usually one side of the offensive line that's working together against two guys with pads that might be a 1-3 look or a 3-5 look, whatever, or sorry, a 1-5 look. And they try and work through that, but they don't. It's mostly about hand placement. It's mostly about not making the wrong first step. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but I think D'Alessandro will always have a job in the NFL based on what he can do and the way the Ravens have had a record of developing linemen. I just think it would just my opinion that the scheme thing is really more Roman. So anyway, getting back to my question related to Monken is, he's obviously wed to some of the players he's going to inherit. He doesn't really have a choice. The Ravens can't rebuild their roster all at once. They only have a few draft picks. They're stuck with some of the players they've got. And from that, do you think they're stuck with some of the scheme as well? I mean, I love the run game, but the question is, how much is Monken going to be able to deviate from existing run concepts?
I think that just depends on the skill set of the players already in Baltimore. I imagine that they'll keep a lot of the same run schemes that they've had simply because it's worked really well. And Monken knows that the players can do it. I think that he'll integrate a little bit more zone than what we have seen. And we saw a little bit more of that this past year with Tyler Linderbaum, and Morgan Moses is good in space as well, surprisingly. And and Ronnie Stanley, you know, when he's healthy, he can move quite well. So I think that he'll, you know, add a little bit to it, but the Ravens are going to stick with, you know, some of the things that they already do extremely well in the run game.
Okay, so this was Monken's third year at Georgia, correct?
Is that right? Yes.
So he was there his first year. He had been Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So he's one of the players. I'll be interested to see what Monken can get out of him, whether there's a step up in his play, whether he can have a come to Jesus talk about him taking the game more seriously, whatever it needs to be. And by the way, I don't know for a fact that Ben Cleveland is not taking the game seriously, but something is keeping him on the bench. Right. And Ben Powers had a great year, and Zeitler had a great year, and he never really got a chance. It's true. But on the other hand, you know, I kind of wish he had won the job by now, as opposed to still leaving it in doubt when I had him so highly thought of coming out of Georgia in the draft a couple of years ago. If there is somebody who can get something out of Ben Cleveland, I certainly hope it's Todd Monken.
I agree. And I think that there will be some familiarity between the two, obviously, and that should help. That should help Ben Cleveland. I can't figure out why, just like you, why Cleveland hasn't taken that step, but hopefully this is the year in year three.
All right. We talked about the tight end some, but an important component of the tight end play that was really has not been present for all of the last two seasons, part of it because Jackson's been hurt and part of it because it's not really Jackson's MO, is a true play action game, one where Jackson can take a snap, turn his back to the field, and then reacquire it after a fake handoff. Now, one of the issues with that is the boot element of that is not going to be particularly successful with a super mobile quarterback like Jackson, because that edge defender onto the boot side is always going to be completely focused on where's that ball. Does Lamar Jackson still have it? It's his first responsibility. And Joe Flacco could get away with a lot of that because he wasn't mobile. It's paradoxical in a way. Jackson actually has to make a play. Would you expect Monken, based on what you've seen from him at Georgia and other places for that matter, would be somebody who'd want to bring more turn your back play action, even though there might be some growing pains with it?
I think he will. The play action game was pretty strong at Georgia, and Stetson Bennett is in no way, shape, or form the same athlete as Lamar Jackson, but he is a mobile quarterback. I think most people would say that. And Todd Monken was really good at utilizing that mobility from Bennett. So I think you could see some similar things with the Ravens as long as Lamar Jackson is here and, you know, perhaps take it to the next level. So some of that play action stuff, some of the boot action, and perhaps some long runs off of that could be really effective. But I agree with your point. It's really frustrating having the extremely mobile quarterback for this particular type of play, because they're so effective in most other cases. But you're right, that defender on the edge is just focused on the quarterback, so the quarterback has very little room for error to avoid that player.
Yeah, you're when you roll the quarterback right, and a famous play in Ravens history, the Lamar returning from the bathroom play.
Right.
So it was a roll right with some additional protection kept in. I don't remember if it was two or three kept in on the play, but it was a low. There weren't a lot in that route beyond Marquise Brown, and actually benefited from some bumping in the secondary going on with a defensive lineman who dropped a cover. But when they have that opportunity where multiple players can stay in, they can effectively set up kind of wall they would when they're stretching a run to that side and then pass off it. And the Ravens have been, I think, very successful doing that, whether it's it's probably the best that Huntley ever looks when they try and run it like that, giving him extra time like that, because he's not comfortable staying in the pocket. And it's also very good for Jackson. It doesn't really create a lot of run opportunities when he boots out in that direction, not nearly as many as, in my opinion, when he stays in the pocket and waits for the pass rush lanes to break down. But this would be part of the question is what would, you know, would you see that being part of the offense, or is it a, I want to get back to play action in a second. Does this match with his MO at Georgia?
Yeah, I think you saw Bennett get out on the move a little bit in space, and he's a shorter quarterback as well. I mean, not like Lamar. Bennett's more like 5'11", 6 foot, and Lamar Jackson is 6'2", I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite as much of an issue with the offensive lineman being taller for Lamar Jackson, but for the shorter quarterbacks, sometimes recapture the field, see who's open, it's nice to get them outside the pocket. And I think that's something that could continue with Lamar with his legs. And it'll be part of the offense for sure. But I do imagine if the Ravens are able to keep Lamar Jackson and they address the wide receiver position, we will see Lamar Jackson in the pocket a little bit more this year than what we have in years past.
All right. I think that'd be good to see. And if you're going to keep him in the pocket, I definitely want to see some turn your back play action to do it there. It probably would mean the Ravens are going to go back to a few more looks out of a true tailback or out of the pistol, if you want to call it that. It could be just a true tailback where he's under center, but it could be actually out of the pistol as well. That changes where Lamar is dangerous as a runner to being to the outside. And one of the things that's happened the last few years is Lamar's been tremendously dangerous up the middle as a runner, running out of sidecar. So do you get any sense of how Monken would be more likely to use Lamar, pistol or sidecar?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, hope we didn't lose Jake here, but we might have.
Okay, we're good.
We're good. Yes.
So it's tough to get a feel for it. Right now, I would say that it would be a solid mixture of the two, simply because the success that Lamar has had up the middle is phenomenal. But you know, going back to his earlier years, what he could do on the outside was also fantastic. So I think Todd Monken's going to use him in both ways. Just depends on the running backs we have and the skill set in terms of speed and power.
All right, let's talk about some of the other things. Now, we hope we know what the Ravens have going into 2023 in terms of known weapons at wide receiver. We hope that Bateman will be back for the beginning of the year. Devin Duvernay, I don't really have a good handle on in terms of exactly where his injury is, but I certainly hope he'll be back for the beginning of the year as well. I mean, if it's not the case, it's definitely a deeper hole that the Ravens have dug themselves in. If we talk about concepts being layered on in the passing game and a coordinator like Monken coming in, what do you think his first priority might be, and to what in his past might he reach to in terms of concepts to include in the Ravens offense?
I mean, I think you're going to see some more play action for sure. I think you're going to see something that I really liked from Todd Monken at Georgia is the willingness and ability to get the ball to running backs in the passing game. And right now the Ravens don't really have one of those guys, unless you can see the progression of a J.K. Dobbins, or they bring back Justice Hill and they really integrate him into that. Perhaps they draft somebody like a Kenny McIntosh out of Georgia, or a different running back that has that that true skill set as a receiving back. But Georgia did that extremely well, an extension of the run game, get the ball in space and let those guys make plays instead of putting that that pressure on Lamar Jackson, even though he is perhaps the best or one of the best players with the ball in his hands in the NFL.
Okay. One thing that you know we see out of the Pittsburgh Steelers, we see out of the Kansas City Chiefs a fair amount is bunch formations and trying to work off that. How much was that a part of the Georgia offense the last 3 years?
Yeah, it was. Bunches were a pretty decent part that a lot of times they would move all of the receivers on a given play or three of the receiving options over to one side. Sometimes that was a true bunch. Other times it was a little bit more spread out. But yeah, I think you'll see a good bit of that, as well as, like I mentioned a moment ago, the running backs getting the ball. Tight end screens are going to be a big part of the offense as well. And screens to wide receivers. I just think he's going to be much more creative in the passing game, getting the ball to players like Rashad Bateman, Mark Andrews, and another solid receiver that we bring into this offense, perhaps Isaiah Likely as well. I just think there's going to be some of those easy passes for Lamar Jackson where players can create after the catch.
Okay, so one of the things Munkin had the luxury of at Georgia and has certainly had the luxury of at other places like Tampa Bay, probably to a lesser extent at Cleveland too, is some faster receivers who really could guarantee that the field would be much more spread out and threatened vertically. Mm-hmm. Did the Ravens have enough of that to satisfy Munkin, or do you think he's going to be screaming in the draft room for fast receivers?
I think he really wants one. I would almost say need one, because the uncertainty of Devin Duvernay. So yeah, that would be a big priority for me. If I was Todd Munkin talking to EDC or anybody in the front office in terms of adding personnel, speed is a big part of it. Georgia had some speed threats. They have a player, Ladd McConkey, really solid wide receiver. Doesn't look like much, smaller athlete at the position, but very solid receiver, honestly. He had another guy, Jermaine Burton, that ended up transferring to Alabama, kind of a similar mold. But the real speed threat at Georgia did not play much this year, but you saw him in big moments near the end of the season, Arian Smith. Mm-hmm. He had a big catch in the national championship, I believe. He also might have had one in the Ohio State game. That kind of player is what Todd Munkin wants, for sure. I don't know if he needs it to have success, but it certainly helps and is probably a big part of what he wants to do.
When Mark Andrews was a more effective receiver in the past, and Mark Andrews, the passer rating throwing to him has dropped in each of his seasons. One of the things that was true was that he had a speed threat in Marquise Brown that was loosening up the field in some really useful ways, even though he didn't always have great other receivers. And if you look at tape of his catches between level two and level three, particularly in 19, also in 2018, but 19 and 20, I'll pick those 2 years specifically. Brown was peeling off the safeties on a fair number of those plays. And the safeties gave a high priority to Brown and would let Andrews go. It seems to me Andrews gotten obviously a lot more targets, and those targets on the margin have been much less productive than they have been in the past. To me, DeAndre Hopkins' name keeps coming up associated with the Baltimore Ravens. To me, he's the exactly the worst kind of fit for what the Ravens need here. It's not that he's not a good receiver. He probably could help somebody still if he was playing a X role on the other side as well, would be fine on the outside. But I don't think he's the right guy to peel the top off the defense and to be the guy that they always have to assign two people to. I think, you know, as an underneath guy, is going to be a guy you try and close the window on with a linebacker and the cornerback who you assign to him. And he doesn't create opportunities for Andrews. In a lot of ways, he is Andrews. know, at this point in his career, where he's not that terrific speed threat. And you know, this goes to the Ravens and whether or not they might take a receiver number one as opposed to a corner, both positions of very dire need for this team. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Is first of all, do you think a top end speed receiver? So if a Marquise Brown was available at 22, would that be the way they'd go, or would they still go to the best corner available at that point? Now, it's obviously completely dependent on who's on the board,
right?
But where do you see it?
Man, it's pretty neck and neck between corner and wide receiver, in my opinion. It's almost 50-50 for me. I would lean that Baltimore is probably 50. Well, it's not really truly 50-50. Okay. It's more like 35% wide receiver, 28% corner, or 30%, okay, to make it easier. And then the rest of the percentage is the field.
Okay. So that's very good, by the way. I was going to ask you that. I'm at 45, 35, and 20 right now, corner, wide receiver, and other.
Yeah. And I do believe that there will be many corners taken in the first round this year. And the wide receiver class is good, but it's not as strong at the top as I believe the cornerback class is. So there could be this dynamic where the Ravens are on the clock and five corners have already come off the board, which would be pretty impressive. And at that point, the Ravens might still be able to take one of the top receivers available. And then they would be in discussion about, is this receiver better than the sixth corner or another position? So, yeah.
Interesting on draft night last year that the four wide receivers came off before Jordan Davis, before Kyle Hamilton. And obviously Ravens fans very upset with what happened. I think that the second round was the bigger deal, losing Pickens. I don't think the Ravens made a mistake in the with their first overall pick. Mm-hmm. I think you could question whether Lindebaum was the right guy, but Lindebaum had a very solid season for his rookie year, played all the games. Not the pass blocker we'd hope he would be right out of school, but he was the run blocker, and you know, he could build off where he is, hopefully, and become a bigger, stronger player. I'm more concerned with Ajabo at 45 as opposed to a player like Pickens, who could have given them an immediate boost.
I agree with that. And obviously, as a Georgia fan, I was very high on George Pickens from his freshman year on. So that was disappointing, but we have a pass rusher that could be a very important part of this defense to look forward to. So we'll have to hold judgment on that for a few years before we really kind of figure out who won that draft spot. But to answer your question about the type of wide receiver I would hope the Ravens would draft, I do believe a speed threat is a priority. So I would lean more speed threat if they're taking someone in the draft. And I still am happy with the idea of a DeAndre Hopkins or a Mike Evans, if he was available to come to Baltimore to add another weapon. And you don't just want a big time name if that player is on the decline, but a player of that caliber would certainly help out in this offense. You have Mark Andrews, you have Rashad Bateman, who hasn't been healthy yet for a full season, and you want to have more weapons that you can rely upon. So, you know, adding Hopkins or Evans, or maybe it's somebody like DJ Chark, who's not as impressive of a name, that would be good. And then you want to see a guy like Jalin Hyatt or Zay Flowers, or insert another speedy receiver in this class. Jackson Smith and Jigba is not necessarily the fastest guy, but has plenty of athleticism. He's a little bit more of a slot type. Any of those guys could be interesting for this Baltimore Ravens offense with Todd Monken.
Yeah, I'd be excited about Chark a little bit. I mean, he's only 26 years old right now. DeAndre Hopkins is going to be 31 in June. The Ravens just do not have good success generally acquiring wide receivers, but even the ones that have had a little bit of success, Marcus Robinson back in 2003, had a very brief period of success, frankly, with the Ravens. But that same year, they acquired Frank Sanders, and he did not have success with the Ravens. You know, they obviously made a terrible move in going out to get Lee Evans. Anquan Boldin did work out. Wallace was a reasonable signing for his period with the Ravens. He's really the one older guy they've gotten since Boldin, who's been okay.
Steve Smith, I would say.
Oh, good point. Steve Smith. That is a really good one. I kind of left him out. We just had this discussion on the show the other night about who had they gotten since Boldin, who was older, that was any good. And we both blacked out on Steve Smith. Unfortunately, Steve Smith missed a lot of time with injury with the Ravens, yep. but certainly was a hell of a player when he was on the field. All right, so we'll see what the Ravens do in terms of doing that. I want to talk about a few of the cons, and we don't have to take nearly as long on this because, frankly, Ravens fans, I don't think, want to hear the cons about Todd Monken, but there are some interesting things. He's 57 years old, if I recall correctly now, and one of the barbs that is out there on Twitter about this being a bad hire, a terrible hire, is that he doesn't present a threat to be the next head coach, and number two is that he's already lived his entire life around the NFL and college ball, and presumably is not going to be a revolutionary with regard to scheme. And so, you know, if you want a revolutionary with regard to scheme, with regard to probably thought about win probability and whatnot, usually you're talking about a younger guy. What are your thoughts on that?
I honestly think both of those points. The first point, I think, is ridiculous. The second point I can see a little bit, but you're talking about an offensive coordinator that really put Georgia on the map in terms of offense. We were thinking of this Bulldogs team as a defensive unit through and through, and really Todd Monken had turned it around to a point where the offense, you know, more than held its own. It carried the team in some games. Georgia's defense is phenomenal. Kirby Smart's a great defensive mind. Not taking anything away from that. But the offense truly did its part. And with some, you know, lesser known players that developed, like he was able to take Stetson Bennett, a walk-on quarterback, to the promised land twice. And Bennett looked really good, especially in 2022. So to say that because he's an older guy, that he's not revolutionary, or that it's going to be a little bit more stale, possibly. I think that's kind of silly considering what we all just witnessed, the past 2 years at the University of Georgia. And I think if you look back at his other years in the NFL, with Cleveland, he had very productive players, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb. Their team was not the best. Baker Mayfield was not perfect, but he was able to get production out of the playmakers. I think with the Ravens, he is going to find production out of the playmakers, and he has a better bar to start with if Lamar Jackson is still the quarterback here.
Okay.
So, well, yeah.
41.1 yards per game with Stetson Bennett at quarterback in 2022. And obviously, the Georgia defense did play a role in the 41.1 offensive points per game. But yeah. But still, an outstanding number and one you don't take for granted. But is it Georgia or Alabama who won a game 9-6 a few years back? That might have been the national championship game, but it might have been another.
I don't know if it was Georgia, unless it was a few years ago.
It might be as long as a decade, because that's about how long ago things stick with me. So anyway, Older guy. So you're not concerned anyway about him not being a Harbaugh replacement, and you're not concerned about his age making him not a revolutionary. Neither of those things really bother you.
Correct. I think, honestly, people are kind of underestimating what his aspirations could be. Just because he's 57 years old doesn't mean this guy never wants a head coaching opportunity. And it's, in my opinion, when we were talking about the offensive coordinator job in general for Baltimore, it is the ideal scenario for a coordinator to come into Baltimore, have extreme success, and get hired as a head coach. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as a Ravens fan, you realize as long as John Harbaugh is the head coach and he is having success, he's not going anywhere unless he retires.
Right.
So the best you can get is success. And with success comes more opportunity for people. Let me stop
you there for a second, yeah. Because this is one of the big questions about the hire. Now, I'm generally positive on Todd Monken, and I only presented those previous two things to basically allow you to refute them. I don't really buy either of them. I don't even care about whether or not somebody thinks he's a Harbaugh replacement. If he's good enough to be a Harbaugh replacement, fantastic. And some other team can have him, more than likely is the answer to that. But the hire of Monken does not take advantage of the NFL minority rules. And whatever the rules are, I believe take advantage of them the best you can. San Francisco certainly understands this. You know, they've had a bunch of third round draft picks added from the fact that they've lost coordinators of color or other coaches of color to significant roles. So this would have been a great opportunity if they had the right guy that they thought could be hired up to promote into that role, whether it was from within or somebody outside the organization who still has a head coaching job ahead of him in the future. So for that reason, maybe a younger African-American coach might have been a correct answer or a good answer in terms of giving your team a good opportunity to get some third round draft picks in the future.
I agree. And that's a higher level thought process of the front office. I don't really believe the Ravens separate their hires like a lot of other teams do, where the general manager is kind of ranked above the head coach. That's a similar theme that I hear a lot of places, but in Baltimore, I believe it's a little bit more head coach reports to Steve, general manager reports to Steve, and not so much the other. Is that true?
Yeah, you're correct. So there's really three systems. And occasionally Pat Kerwin will talk about this on his show, but he says you can go into a strong head coach role, where basically that's what they had out in Oakland, where Mayock was supporting Gruden. And basically, right, Gruden is in charge of the personnel decisions and whatnot, and Mayock is using his scouting experience to try and, you know, balance the board, find the right guys, make other good personnel decisions from around the league, and using his abilities in there. But it's a strong head coach system. And Gruden was the guy with the really long-term contract that they still got rid of early. But the other system is a strong GM system. And I would say that Ozzie Newsome was not that, although he could have been, you know, in terms of the guys. But he said two guys in Billick and Harbaugh primarily who were extremely strong individual leaders. And he never had to stray much into that realm. There are other places where the GM really has more control. I think that system is probably rarer these days. And then the Ravens have the third system, which is basically both report to the owner. They're separate, right, but equal entities. And in the draft room, you know, the DaCosta is king, but other people can have input when it comes to the roster, to the game day actives and, you know, the strategy on the field and whatnot. Harbaugh is going to be king, but EDC can say, hey, can I help you by going out and getting player X, to augment what we've got right now? And so hopefully that kind of a system works. And that really goes into the hiring roles. So when they're hiring somebody like Monken, it's Harbaugh's hire. And I don't know to what degree, you know, either DaCosta as a GM can say, hey, John, look, we got two candidates. I pick your guy. But all things being equal, we want a person of color because that gives us the possibility of having third round draft picks in the future.
Yeah, I'm not sure that either, but that was kind of the point that I was getting to. Extremely high level of thought, but I'm not sure how much the ownership, Steve Bisciotti, or the whole team hiring process thought out about getting future compensatory picks with this hire. It is really a smart move if you believe this guy is going to be great and he's going to move on and become a head coach. It's a great point.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I think actually probably speaks well to Monken as opposed to poorly, but you could make the argument either way, is that the Ravens, you know, had two guys that they were presumably grooming to be an OC who, you know, may have had higher aspirations for there, but T. Martin in terms of the passing game coordinator and Keith Williams were both guys that they wanted, you know, certainly to potentially be heirs to the job that Roman left behind. And neither of them was taken. I assume they were interviewed, but I don't know. I really don't have any idea if they were even considered in the interview process. Obviously, in some sense, Harbaugh probably knows about enough about both of them to either eliminate them right off the fact or interview them and say, we want it. You know, I don't think with 30 people that they talk to, I don't think there's any question about meeting some minimum number of minority candidates that they talk to. So I don't think they would play any games with those two to yeah. give them undue hope that they've been there. But if you look back over Ravens hires, the last three DC and OC hires have been Martindale, who was hired from on staff. So, you know, obviously in-house promotion of a veteran guy. I was actually very critical of that hire because there wasn't anything about his past that said, obviously, this guy's going to be great. And then I was wrong. I mean, he was fantastic. So I'm very happy with that hire. The Roman hire is from staff. It is another older guy, but is a guy who certainly had proven himself in the run game coordinator and with Jackson before he got the thing. And the end of the 2018 season with how well that went, it seemed like that was a perfectly reasonable thing. And then the McDonald hire effectively was in-house. Yes, right. He took a sabbatical to go back to Michigan for, 1 year or two, whatever it was.
It's just 1 year, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, he's an in-house hire, effectively. They knew exactly who he was, and they brought him back. This time, whoever they talked to in-house, whoever they considered in-house on the staff, and this is why I'm not sure there's that one run game scheme guy is still left around, it just wasn't the right guy for them. So if they did consider either Williams or Martin, you know, we don't know about it. And I've never seen a complete candidate list or anything like that. I don't know if one has been produced. I know there's been a snippet here, a snippet there on Twitter right. of people that the Ravens have talked to.
Yeah, the Ravens are one of those teams that really keep everything closed off from the public. They don't leak a lot of information, even if it's information that doesn't seem like it matters one way or the other. If people know, they are very tight-lipped. So, we do not know about those two guys, and that would be interesting. I did just see a report tonight, I believe, that T. Martin is getting an interview with the Colts for their offensive coordinator position.
Wow. Okay.
Unfortunately, that would not help the Ravens in the comp pick. It has to be a head coach.
Okay, so that is unfortunate, and obviously you want to have having a great stable is always good. I don't think that anybody thought that Culley was was a head coaching candidate. Then out of the blue, it happened. You know, so it obviously is a positive thing. Anyway, I will say this: the minority hiring rules, I believe, are doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're getting opportunities for people. There's people like me, and there's certainly, if I'm thinking about it, every GM in the National Football League is thinking about it in terms of, can we find a person of color so we can take advantage of the draft pick system in the future? That opportunities are being created by this program. So when somebody comes out and bashes the fact that a Monken is hired over candidates of color, I say he almost has to be more qualified in some sense.
Right.
In some sense, you have to believe this is an indication of a very significant amount of qualification that would occur, because every other, you know, common sense thing says hire somebody of color given the opportunity that creates.
Yeah. And I mean, just without going into the depth of it, what other offensive coordinator from college football would be more qualified to come into the NFL and be an offensive coordinator than what Todd Monken had just produced at Georgia?
Yeah, he checks all the boxes in a lot of ways in terms of having been in the NFL before, had some success right. there, not always great success, but some success.
Sure.
And then obviously being a unbelievable developer of lesser talent on the offensive side of the ball at Georgia.
Yep. Yeah, I agreed with that.
All right. Outstanding. Do you think if you're John Harbaugh and you're talking to Todd Monken about him coming into this role, is part of your discussion, you're going to be here for X number of years. I know you're a head coaching candidate in the NFL. And even if you didn't, maybe there's a point, whether it's 2 or 3 years from now, or maybe 5 years from now, that you're going to be retiring if that doesn't happen. I want you to be really cognizant of developing a successor for your role. I want you to have, we have good succession planning. That's our goal anyway on this team, but I want you to pick one or two guys on your staff that really have the possibility to be your successor when the time comes.
That would be a great conversation for him to have. I have no idea if that's something very common, but I mean, you'd see it all the time, you know, offensive coordinators become head coaches mm-hmm. and then their kind of understudy becomes the offensive coordinator at the previous spot, or they become offensive coordinators at the new place where the other guy left. So it would be great to see, because Todd Monken clearly has a knack for play calling and game planning for sure. And I would love to see, you know, somebody under his wing and really learning from him, because he has plenty of experience.
You would know the answer to this, Jake. So in his time at Georgia, how many of his assistant coaches on the offensive side of the ball went off and got hired into bigger jobs? And that happens, by the way, all the time in college football. If you look at Todd Monken's career, 16 different jobs he's had in 34 years in the NFL and college. And that's what it takes. You have to move every couple of years if you want to move up the chain, better and better opportunities, if you want to make it all the way. And Monken has certainly lived that life. Have the other Georgia assistant coaches also been hired out of the program and into other good jobs, in your understanding?
I believe a few of them have left for bigger roles. I don't have the list in front of me, so I can't speak to how many, but yeah, the Georgia staff does kind of ebb and flow. There's some turnover year by year because of how successful they've been recently. But Kirby is kind of making it a big time culture to have guys there for a while. And a lot of former alumni from the University of Georgia are on his staff. So they just hired Mike Bobo again to be the offensive coordinator. He had previously coached at Georgia as an OC. He also played with Kirby Smart in the same year. I believe is the 94 season, something like that, at UGA. Kirby Smart, Will Muschamp, and Mike Bobo are all on the staff at Georgia, and they played together at Georgia. So there's that thing going on. At the same time, they're all very good coaches. So
okay. And there is, since there's kind of no place higher to go in college football, certainly right now, than Georgia. I mean, you go to Alabama, you go to other sure. schools in the SEC, but you really would want a promotion anywhere you'd move. And you're so far close to the top of the college pyramid in terms of what your job is that you kind of wouldn't want to take a big step down in school, even to be the head coach necessarily. I mean, you're probably waiting for that OC or DC role at a really major program. Mm-hmm. Before you make the move.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Todd Monken, it had been reported that he was the highest paid assistant in college football this past year. So
you got the dollar amount on that?
I believe it was $2.1 million, which does not sound outrageous, honestly. That's what has been reported. Multiple people have said he was the highest paid assistant. So defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, I guess he was the top guy. I believe the Bulldogs would have paid him more, maybe another, you know, $500,000 perhaps, but there might just be more money in the NFL for coordinators.
Yeah, you certainly, it's one of the ways to beat the cap in the NFL is you can ignore the cap when you're hiring your coordinators. So if you have an unlimited budget for this sort of thing, and nobody has an unlimited budget, but if you want to spend more than the cap, I mean, one of the really good applications is coaching, and a good developmental coach. I mean, I just love the idea that Monken could be that guy for the Ravens offensive players, not for necessarily for the system, but just get more out of the individual players.
Yes.
All right, Jake, just love discussing this with you. You're the perfect guy to have this talk with, and really appreciate you coming on. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, so you guys will find me on Twitter. My handle is @RealJakeVogel, V-O-G-E-L is the last name. I'm always happy to talk Ravens football and Georgia football, as well as the NFL draft and college football in general. So feel free to hit me up. talk on there, and I enjoy coming on podcasts occasionally as well.
All right. Well, great, Jake. I'm sure we'll have you on for more draft content as the draft season rolls on. Looking forward to that. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a That One Play episode, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. By now, you probably know what that is. Just pick one play in Ravens history. And it's your recollections of it, your thoughts on it. Maybe they're historical. Maybe it's a pivot point in Ravens history. Maybe it was just a cool play. Some reason you bought your jersey. Some reason there's a big purple stain on your rug because you spilled your drink. You were so excited about the play itself. Whatever it might be, I'd be happy to have you on the show and just talk to you about it. And these have been a lot of fun. I've done a bunch of them already, and I'm really looking forward to doing more. It's a very fun type of content to work on. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.